everyone, and welcome to Minute 13 of Season 12 of Moving Around Minute, the daily podcast where we dig our way through the 1994 Tim Robbins, Morgan Freeman film, The Shawshank Redemption, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and join me once again while she's has her feet up during sabbatical is Lisa Leahy. Welcome back.
Hey. Thanks for having me. Always happy to show up.
Nice to have you back for this Wednesday episode. There you go.
Yeah.
We've hit the middle episode of our five episodes that we're going to be doing.
Mm-hmm. So just keep going. We got this.
For sure. All right. So minute 13 begins with the camera panning on Red as he narrates, and ends with the prisoners doing a right face.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended things yesterday with the new prisoners somewhat being intimidated by all the old prisoners who are you know, constantly just talking about fresh fish, whatever.
Yeah, shouting at them.
That's right. We're not sure exactly. We're not sure yet what that phrase actually means. But I'm sure that within the next half hour, they're going to explain
that. I expect that'll come up, yeah.
You know, that's my assumption. I could be wrong, but we will
have to keep listening.
That's right. That we will find out shortly. So then we get to see Red, and you know, as the camera focuses on him, we start to hear more narration from Morgan Freeman, who is the perfect narrator.
Oh my God. Incredible.
And, yeah, I love the way that the camera zooms in on him a little bit, and then mm-hmm. you know, then it shows us the prisoners walking through the yard with you know, all the other prisoners just clapping and cheering and stuff like that.
Yeah. And Andy looking pretty small for a dude his height, you know.
Trying to look as small as possible, exactly.
Yep.
And then Red says, "I must admit, I didn't think much of Andy the first time I laid eyes on him. Looked like a stiff breeze would blow him over. That was mm-hmm. my first impression of the man." And then Snooze, who's next to him, goes, "What do you say, Red?"
Yep.
And Red goes, "That tall drink of water with the silver spoon up his ass."
Yeah.
So
Red's putting his money on Andy here.
That's right. That's 100% right.
A rich bet, too, no less.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Now, what is a tall drink of water?
Tall guys. Nice tall men.
That's part of it. It's a tall drink
That's
of water.
That's what it means to me.
Okay. Well, you're going to like what the actual terminology is for you know, what a tall drink of water is. It's an idiom used to describe a person who is exceptionally tall, attractive, and striking. See? So it's not just tall.
Well, that frankly, that's the thing for me.
I understand that. We've already discussed this.
We've established that too.
Yes.
Yeah. I actually like, because I'm tall myself. I'm 5'10". And I'm not, you know, generally petite kind of person. So it's like I like somebody who's taller than me. And it's just it's not just me being, you know, some people will look down, you know, oh, that's you're being too picky. It's well, I'm kind of not. It's you know, if you are taller than me, you are that much more attractive to me. And I actually picked a guy up in a bar one night. This dude was 6'10". And I was so excited about it. I actually went up to this dude and I looked at him and I went, "How's the weather up there?" And he rolled his eyes so hard at me. He turned around and went to leave. And I'm like, no, get back here. I said, "You see how tall I am? I get to use that line on you." And he was like, yeah. And I was like, "Look, I know it was terrible, but I couldn't help it." And it was really a shame. Like, I dated this guy for about a month and he had the personality of a wet mop. But my God, did I try. He's just like 6'10". I was like, "Oh my God, get over here." But yeah, no, that didn't work out too long. But yeah. Tall drink of water. You've got my attention.
Okay, good. And what?
I'm simple. I'm easy to please. Just be taller than me.
That's fine. All right, and what about Silver Spoon? Besides a Rick,
Oh,
the
that's
Ricky
somebody,
Schroeder,
yeah.
besides a Ricky Schroeder sitcom from the 80s
Well, the
that people
sitcom
love. Well, obviously.
comes from the metaphor,
Obviously,
yeah.
obviously.
Yeah, it has to do with wealth, you know, being born with wealth. So.
Okay. So I will, first of all, it's
The term is normally this being born with a silver spoon in your mouth, though, is the actual idiom,
right.
not up his ass.
Exactly. Well, it basically means someone who deals with unearned wealth, elitism, and extreme privilege. That's the idea. And I mean, this is something that has been around for centuries, you know, where they
Oh, yeah.
refer to people this way. It basically means someone who's born into a wealthy family and never had to struggle, and that they're also sheltered from reality and things like that. And so there's a bunch of different in their songs that have used it also. So you have the song "Born Under a Bad Sign." Are you familiar with it from
Okay.
Blues Standard?
Sure.
Familiar with that at all? And so the lyric is, "If it wasn't for bad luck, I wouldn't have had l no luck at all.
Had any luck at all? Yeah.
Born under a bad sign, I've been down since I began to crawl." And the idea is that you know, it's contrasting people, you know, in blues culture to other people who are born with silver spoons and stuff like that.
Sure.
The song "Fortunate Son" by Creedence Clearwater Revival also uses the term. You
Yep.
know, some
That's such a good
that's right.
song.
And you know, that was one of the themes that was the I believe the opening theme, maybe even the closing theme of my Die Hard Duo season. And it's
Was it?
yeah.
Interesting.
Some folks are born made to wave the flag, and when the band plays "Hail to the Chief," they point the cannon at you. "It ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no senator's son. It ain't me, it ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one." And the second verse says, "Some folks are born with silver spoon in hand." See, silver spoon in hand,
Yes.
not in their
Better than in the butt steak.
Yes, that is true.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. Then obviously, you know, as we mentioned, the 1980s TV show Silver Spoons was about a wealthy inventor and his son who lived in a mansion filled with arcade games and a rideable toy train, and the idea of living life with the ultimate effortless luxury.
Why was that
I
popular?
don't know, but I see I
That
have great
sounds
memories. I
terrible.
have great memories of it, and you know, it's one of those shows that I don't want to rewatch because I'm afraid that
Yeah.
it
Oh, it's
would
gotta be
ruin it.
bad. It must be terrible. I never watched it. It was just a bit too early for me. Oh my God, can you imagine? It's gotta be awful. I kind of want to watch it now just to see how bad it is.
Yeah, I sort of do also. So I don't know. Maybe
Crazy.
I will try and figure it out. I don't know.
There you go.
Right. Now, do you know when this term the phrase "silver spoon in a mouth" was starting to be used?
Absolutely not.
It was all the way back to the
When you ask me history questions, Rob, I don't know any
Well,
of these. You know
maybe you
that.
know it from literature. You know, did
Is it a literature thing? Is it like a Dickens thing?
no.
Oh,
It
well.
goes even further back. I'm surprised it's not in any of Shakespeare because it's from the Middle Ages and the early modern period, when it's
Interesting.
dealing with social customs, dining etiquette, and health beliefs. You know, things like that.
And health what?
Beliefs. I don't really know what that
Oh.
means, but
It's better to eat with a silver spoon, perhaps? Like you get maybe the flatware they were using is less sanitary?
Oh, it could be.
Interesting.
And in the 1500s and the 1600s in Great Britain, it was the cultural tradition for wealthy godparents to give a silver baptism spoon, which was known as an apostle spoon, to a
Huh.
newborn child at their christening.
In the beginning of the spoon
I
collections.
guess so. I guess so.
Interesting. We never had those growing up. Thank God my family didn't collect those. My mom collected a lot of things, but not those.
Okay.
We didn't have spoons.
Right. And in medieval Europe, the phrase also carried a literal medical context. Wealthy families noticed that their children survived plagues and diseases at higher rates than poor families. They believed that having babies stuck on silver spoons or feeding them exclusively with silver would keep them healthy. And it's actually,
that's stupid. I'm sorry.
But it's true. All right.
No, it's not. Yes, that's stupid. It's because they were wealthy that they survived, not because of the silver spoons.
But silver is a natural antimicrobial and kills bacteria.
Okay, so we go back to the flatware.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so they were protected from germs that would kill the poor children who were using wooden spoons.
Okay.
Okay, now, all right, now let's go into the history of the literature of it. Okay.
Here we go.
It first was appeared in the early 18th century. All right, Don Quixote has it in there.
I've never read that. I need to read that. It's on my list.
Where apparently Sancho Panza says every man was not born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and that's in 1712. Mm-hmm. There is a book of Scottish proverbs that came out in 1721, which also has that phrase: "Every man is not born with a silver spoon in his mouth."
Cervantes was reading Scottish stuff.
No, I think it was vice versa.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, but I don't pay attention to the dates. I'm sorry.
Well, it's 12 and 21. They're interchangeable.
Ah, okay. So, yeah, the numbers jostled in my brain.
Yeah.
I love it.
Exactly. So then Ernie, who's standing next to Reg, goes, "That guy? Never happened." And you see, Ernie's right.
Ernie is right. They're all right. He ends up having to pay a big bet.
Ernie should have made the bet, because he would have gotten...
That's two packs of cigarettes. My God.
That's right. And then Red goes, 10 cigarettes. And Snooze goes, "That's a rich bet." And Red looks at him and goes, "All right, who's going to prove me wrong? Haywood? Jigger? Skeet? Floyd?" And, they all they just motion to him that they are interested. And he goes,
Yeah, it's like a silent auction.
That's right.
Yeah.
Four brave souls. Again, I like the way that they do that. It definitely works.
Yeah. I can see it. It kicks up some excitement in the doldrums of what their days are like, you know? That's what's going to be interesting. When a new pack comes in, it's going to make their life, it's going to make the day a little bit more interesting.
Correct.
You know, something is happening that's different, you know, something to look forward to, because now they're waiting for nightfall and how all of that's going to come out, you know?
Right. What's interesting is the fact that we don't know how often new prisoners come to Shawshank. You know, is this a weekly thing? Is this a monthly thing? You know, it's not as if the siren rang and everyone's like, "Oh, okay, it's that time of the week," you know,
right,
for that whole thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's rare enough, probably like at most, you know, every 2 weeks, maybe once a month. I can't imagine it being any more frequent than that. I feel like even that would be too frequent, you know, like it just feels like something that would happen further out, you know.
Okay. I can understand that. And then the shot changes and we see Andy walking, you know, walking towards the camera, basically. And it's great, because if you look in the back, once again, you can see the two guards up on the, up on the bridge in the background. You can still see the bus also over there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very interesting.
Yeah. This is that, like, as this tilts up, like as Andy looks up at this giant tower, this like foreboding, you know, brick structure that's just going to swallow him whole, you know, like this whole the end of this sequence, like you feel just how overwhelming this is. It's like, it really does, it kind of swallows him up, because that angle as he goes into the archway is just swallowed by black.
Yeah.
You know, as they use that to change the sequence. But it's such an intense moment where it's like, that's it. That's the end. Say goodbye to daylight. You know, like this is the end of freedom right here.
Yeah.
Oh, and that was always the end of the sequence that I would assign for my students to analyze, you know, from the beginning of last week to this, you know, that's where the cutoff was, where they would have to analyze the cinematography in it. But oh my God, that tilt at the end is just a gut punch. Right.
And at this point, you know, we do see that the camera, it's just Roger Deakins does an amazing job in this movie. You know,
I know it took
23 years after this movie came out for him to finally win an Oscar, but I'm always upset that he didn't win an Oscar for his work here.
I don't know how he didn't.
Cinematography. The cinematography here is unbelievable because, I mean, it gives us the impression of surrounded by these walls. You know, that type of thing.
He's swallowed whole. He really is.
Yeah, and it's very funny. The Hebrew title of this movie translates into Walls of Hope.
Interesting. Which, oh, that's a cool title.
Because again, it wouldn't have worked calling it Shawshank. Nobody in English knows what the hell Shawshank is. You know, so
sure.
But you know, so it this is just such an amazing shot.
Yeah. I mean, Deakins is off the charts. Like, this is a man who's just like, I mean, my
God. It makes you also feel like you're on a roller coaster because you're like upside down because you're looking so high up.
Mm-hmm.
It's
dizzying. Right.
And the camera keeps moving inside.
Yep.
You know, and then as you said, it fades to black, and then we see, feet walking on broken tiles, basically, with a big yellow stripe down the side there.
And, yeah. Well, they're on one side of that line too. Like, that's the divide. Here it is. It's us and them now.
Right. Now, if you look, you can see that the seventh man is not connected to the man in front of him. Now, I don't know if that's a goof, or maybe this is the guy. This was a guy who was just on a different. You know, yeah, these guys were on this bench and those guys were on that bench.
Where are you looking? Are you looking at the feet shot, or when we see the full body?
When you see the full body, because it's not their feet. He's not connected at the waist.
Oh, I see it. I wonder if there's two different lines.
That it could be that there's two different lines.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. I never noticed that before.
Well, that's why you look at movies minute by minute. You see things.
That's why I come and hang out with you.
That's right.
I love it. There's also some random dude now behind Andy. Like, you look at him in those other scenes, and he seems like
there was always a guy behind Andy.
I don't pay attention.
Andy was not the 14th guy. He's the 13th man. You know, there are 14 here, as you see them, And then Hadley walks past all of them and screams, "Turn to the right, eyes front." And, they all know they need to turn. And as they turn, that's where this minute
ends.
Exactly.
Yes. Intense.
It really is. Intense. And again, I just keep going back to that amazing shot of just looking up at the whole thing. Just wow.
Yeah. It's dizzy. I mean, like you said, it is dizzying. I mean, in fact, when I stand in front of buildings, I can't look up at buildings like that. Like when I'm in a city somewhere and, you know, you're walking around, you're just surrounded by all of these skyscrapers. If I look up, I feel like I'm about to fall backwards. Like, it just, I can't do it. So that affects me every time I see it.
Mm-hmm. No, completely. So now we will do today's segment, which is called Midweek Morgan.
Yes.
Where my guests will give their top five Morgan Freeman performance. So once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
I'm going to start with Kiss the Girls, which was our introduction to Morgan Freeman as Dr. Alex Cross from the James Patterson books. And that was the first one that was adapted. And I think Morgan Freeman only played Alex Cross twice, between that one and The Long Came a Spider, before they ended up, you know, kind of sputtering off and doing something else. But, you know, having read a number of those books and seeing him in that role, and that particular film is really good. That particular book is a lot more intense, I think. And so that was a really cool one. You know, like, he's got this gravitas to him and you trust him as a detective, and it's just, it works. He's that guy that you're going to absolutely trust to do whatever it is you need him to do. I guess while we're going with that, I'm gonna go to the incredible, most perfect casting of Morgan Freeman as God in Bruce Almighty. I mean, my goodness. Like, I'm not a comedy film person, and I am definitely not a Jim Carrey fan, but that movie is so much fun. And I love it so much. And I forget it. Morgan Freeman as God, there is no other option. It just isn't. He's just way, way, way too good. And him in that white suit and just the patience and just the voice, the whole thing. Number three, I'm gonna go Shawshank. I did have to pull the movie we're talking about to put him in a put a
Yeah, of
list
course.
here. Just, I mean, it's a career-making role. It's so good, for so many different reasons. And I don't need to talk about it here because it's what the whole podcast is about. Secondly, for number two, I'm gonna go with Lean On Me and his role as Principal Joe Clark. This was a film that had a big impact on me, as an educator. My parents are educators. My grandmother was an educator, and I saw this film, and I remember saying that, as a teacher, I wanted to be a combination of Joe Clark and Lou Ann Johnson. And Lou Ann Johnson is, she wrote the book My Posse Don't Do Homework, which is what the movie Dangerous Minds is based on. I might have just helped somebody in your game for later on at some point, but we'll see. So like I that film just made such an impact on me, and how he was firm and tough but supportive and loving and elevating of all these kids. And that's, kind of what I want to do. And then Seven is a perfect movie to me. His role is William Somerset in Seven. That movie is perfect, in my opinion. And so, again, the gravitas with which he takes that role, and Somerset as the weary detective who's retiring and really just can't do this anymore. And
I'm too
one of
old.
my favorite sequences in film is, yeah, well,
I
no, that's
know.
Lethal
I'm
Weapon.
aware of that. I'm just.
I'm making sure people who are listening know, and of course they know too. But one of my favorite film sequences is when he goes to the library at night, and the beautiful classical music that's playing while he goes around and gets all these books on, Dante's Inferno and Thomas Aquinas and the Canterbury Tales and all of these incredible works of literature. And he's doing all of this work and all of this highlighting and photocopying and putting it all together, and that sequence ends with Brad Pitt as Mills sitting in the car, and a beat cop coming up to him and handing him a bag, and it's got a bunch of Cliff's Notes in it for all of these books. It's just such a wonderful sequence. It's such a wonderful and incredible
Considering that he
film.
will eventually eat Cliff
So that's my,
Booth, so there you go.
yeah, there it is. But my God, I just, that movie is, I don't say that about many films. I don't even say it about my favorite film, but it Seven is a perfect film as far as I'm concerned, and Morgan Freeman is one of the
All
reasons
right,
why.
very cool. That is a great list. All right, now we will play the first of two games that we will play today. And the first game is the one that
Yay!
you like. Name that World War. I'm sorry. Name that book adaptation.
So one that I have a chance to get right.
Maybe. You never know. You never know. All right, let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Round and round and round the wheel goes. Okay, this is a movie from 1946, and the original name of the story that it is based on was The Greatest Gift.
This is not a movie I would have watched. 19 what? 40 something?
46, and you know what? I think I can guarantee that you've seen
Is it It's a Wonderful Life?
it. Yes, it is.
Ha ha! Yay! Yay! I got it right. That's why I was like, wait a minute, in the 40s, I think I understand where this title is going. Yep.
Again, it wasn't chosen for that reason, but it fits
Yeah.
somewhat.
Yay, I got one right. Actually, I
Not
got
good.
one. Didn't I get Mondays right too? I can't even remember
Yeah,
anymore.
no. Mondays was Edge of Tomorrow. No, you did not get
Nope. At least I'd seen it though. The other one, I don't know.
That's right. Soylent Green, you've never seen?
Oh, no, I have seen. Never mind. My memory is not good at this.
All right, so let's play the second game, High-Low, which I know you love.
I'm very good at this game.
Yeah. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get.
Next, you're going to ask me historical dates.
No, we already dealt with that. Maybe tomorrow. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Okay, the 2018 film Black Klansman.
Oh, that was a good movie. That is one of the few movies that's better than the book.
Is that really good? I didn't realize that was written on the book. We're not even talking about
adaptation. So the book, well, the book has got the same title, so it wouldn't be on your list. But it's based on this guy's actual experiences. Well, the guy is a cop. He's not a writer, and the book reads that way. Not denigrating all cops, saying all cops are bad writers, but you know what I mean. Like it's not well written. And Spike Lee just takes that movie and elevates it. I'm going to go with 86%.
No, it is 96%.
Good. I'm glad I'm wrong there, because I thought I'd be too high if I went into the 90s for this one. 9. No, I can't. 8.8.
7.5.
All right. Oh my God, do I suck at this? I have to start. Oh, I have to start shifting my points here.
That's
darn it! I got two more. I got two more.
Two more today.
I got to get it right.
Another six. Get another eight to go. Eight to go. In the wheel for your second one. Okay, the 1982 film *The Verdict* with Paul Newman.
91%.
89. Very close. Nicely done.
I'm better.
Okay. You gotta get within close. You don't have to get exact.
And then 8.1.
7.7.
Okay.
All right. Now let's spin for your third and final one today. The 2018 film Bohemian Rhapsody.
I don't like this movie. I'm annoyed by this movie. I don't want to give this more than I want to give it. 89%.
60.
Good. And 7.1.
7.9.
No. This movie pisses me off. It just makes me mad. Like, I love Rami Malek. I think he's a great actor. I don't like that he gets the Academy Award. It's because he got there first is really the answer. But he should not. I don't like that he wins the Oscar. But Taron Egerton comes along for Rocket Man, does all of his own singing, and doesn't even get a nomination. It just makes me mad. Because Taron Egerton, my God, was good in Rocket Man. Absolutely incredible. In fact, I wasn't even going to see it until I was sitting around at school one day and I'm like, oh, let me listen to some of the soundtrack. And it took two songs. And I was like, yup, I'm going to go see this kid play this movie, play in this role, because my God, does he sound good. Not even a nomination. I'm still salty about that. I will always be salty about it.
Yeah, we don't get to choose. What can I do?
Why not? We should. Fix it, Rob.
We should, but I would be very happy.
My
to
God,
to,
can you imagine? Really, it would be all Taron Egerton and all horror movies if I got to choose. Indy Navarette for Oscar 2027.
All right, very good. So why don't you tell people once again where they can find you?
So you can find me guesting on random podcasts like Rob's podcast and on the Lambcast. Basically, if the Lambcast ever does like horror movies or, you know, dark and twisty misery kinds of movies, chances are I'm going to be on that episode. And you can see what's in store for you on rabbitholepodcasts.com. And I am on a number of podcasts there. I'm not currently active in anything, but I'm on a number of these basic back episodes, and there's all kinds of stuff on there. So go check it out. See what kinds of episodes and shows might appeal to you.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@movierob.net. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And you can find me on Facebook. So, until tomorrow, get busy living.
Or get busy done.